Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories along with Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first,
researchers already know that women live longer than men in all parts of the world. Scientists have largely linked the difference in life expectancy between the sexes to biological survival factors. Now, a new study of wild mammals has found great differences in length of life and aging in many species of mammals. The researchers found that in humans, women live almost 8% longer than men. But among wild mammals, females in 60% of the studied species live on average 18.6% longer. The percentages are very different for different groups of mammals. Jean-François Lemaitre led the study. He is from the University Lyon 1 in France. He and his research team collected information on age-related deaths for 134 groups of 101 wild species of mammals. Lemaitre said, "It was surprising to observe that this gender gap in lifespan often exceeds the one observed in humans and is, at the same time, extremely variable across species." Tomas Zekely from the University of Bath was one of the writers of the study. He told VOA that female lions in the wild live at least 50% longer than male lions. "We previously thought this was mostly due to sexual selection," he said. "However, our data do not support this." Scientists say the risk of death does not increase more quickly in males than in females across species. They say there must be other, more complex reasons. These include things such as environmental conditions in which the animals live, sex-specific growth, survival, and reproduction through the history of the species. Zekely suggests that one reason for the differences between the sexes is that female survival increases when males provide some or all of the parental care. He added that giving birth and caring for young becomes a significant health cost for females, and so this cost is reduced if both parents work together to bring up their offspring. Scientists plan to compare the data on wild mammals with the data on mammals kept in zoos. They want to measure how much biological differences between the sexes affect life expectancy. In zoos, animals do not have to fight with predators or fight for food and mates. Scientists hope the findings will give them a better understanding of what affects length of life in humans. In the past 200 years, the average life expectancy of humans has more than doubled. The main reasons for the increase are improved living conditions and developments in the field of medicine. However, women continue to live longer than men. This suggests biological differences also play a part. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control says the average American man will live to age 76. The average woman in America will live to age 81. Women can also expect to be healthier than men in their older years. Experts said this is because of a combination of biological and social differences. A hormone in men called testosterone is connected to a decrease in their immune system and risk of heart-related diseases as they age. It is also connected to risky behavior, such as smoking, drinking, and unhealthy eating habits.
Seven-year-old Sophia Chung knows what to do when she hears a truck arrive outside her home in Hong Kong. She collects her sheet music and runs out the door. Inside the vehicle, music teacher Evan Kam stands by a piano. He holds a container of alcohol-based hand cleaner and wears a protective face covering. Schools in Hong Kong have been closed since late January because of the coronavirus outbreak. Students have been asked to take classes online. But that does not work very well for piano lessons. Ming's Piano, a music school with 12 teachers and about 200 students, is using 3 trucks to help bring lessons to students' homes. The effort helps keep the business in operation. For students like Sophia, the lessons are a rare and welcome chance to get out of her home. Her mother, Wendy Young, said, "I feel very depressed myself, not to mention my children. They are always asking, 'When can we go out to play? Where can I go? What else can I do?' Now," she said, "we have an option." Ming's Piano lost more than 2/3 of its business after the outbreak. Many of the school's students wanted to continue with music lessons, but did not want to use up masks or take public transportation, said Jessica Lam. She is the business development manager for Ming's Piano. The school took its business on the road in late February. It is now operating at 70% of its pre-outbreak levels. The piano gets cleaned between lessons. The truck is equipped with an air cleaner and lighting, which means the engine has to be running. As the truck's engine makes a soft noise under her feet, Chung works on the song she likes most, "Let It Go," from the Disney movie Frozen. On this day, she plays with both hands, an improvement from last week. Her teacher, Cam, shows his approval. Outside, cars speed by. Sometimes people walking by the truck try to have a look inside. Cam said helping students learn to make small improvements would have been difficult through a video lesson. "Teaching in a truck feels the same as teaching in a music studio," Cam notes. Cam said he visits 6 or 7 students a day, including some new students living in villages far away from populated areas.
Scientists say a new age estimate for the skull of an early human is raising questions about modern human ancestry. The fossilized skull was considered a major discovery when it was found in Zambia in 1921. It was the first fossil of an extinct human species to be discovered in Africa. The skull was named after the area in which it was discovered, Broken Hill. Researchers say a new examination of the fossil suggests that it is much younger than previously thought. The fossil was difficult for scientists to date. That is because the skull was recovered in a mine that later became completely destroyed from mining operations. Researchers now say that two new complex dating methods have estimated the Broken Hill skull to be about 299,000 years old. Past scientific examinations had estimated the fossil was likely about 500,000 years old. The team of researchers said their examination efforts involved years of work that included direct dating of the skull itself, as well as other human and non-human materials found near the discovery area. Reiner Grün of Australia's Griffith University led the examination efforts. He was also the lead writer of a study on the process, which recently appeared in the publication Nature. Grün said in a statement that the New Age estimate changes earlier opinions on both the tempo and mode of modern human ancestry. Grün and his team believe the findings show that human evolution in Africa around 300,000 years ago was a much more complex process than other evidence has suggested. Scientists now believe the process involved the coexistence of several human lineages. Instead of linear evolution, in which each new species replaced the old one, Africa may have been a place where different human species mated with each other. The new estimate means the species represented by the skull was unlikely to have been a direct ancestor of Homo sapiens, the species of human that exists today. Our species first appeared in Africa more than 300,000 years ago before spreading worldwide. Scientists first thought the skull belonged to a new species they named Homo rhodesiensis. But most scientists now believe it is part of the Homo heidelbergensis group. This species is thought to have appeared about 600,000 years ago in parts of Africa and Europe. Chris Stringer is an anthropologist with the Natural History Museum in London. He told the Reuters news agency the latest research suggests that the facial shape of Homo heidelbergensis fossils does not fit an ancestral pattern for our species. Stringer said the age of the fossil suggests that at least three human species lived in Africa around 300,000 years ago. Homo sapiens, he said, were likely present in places like Morocco and Ethiopia. The Homo heidelbergensis is thought to have lived in South Central Africa. The third is called Homo naledi and was recently discovered in South Africa. We already knew that Eurasia contained diverse human lineages about 300,000 years ago, Stringer said. Now, the same applies to Africa. When the skull was discovered in 1921, it provided the first evidence of a prediction that British naturalist Charles Darwin made 50 years earlier. Darwin theorized that Africa was the place where humans broke off from other animals, because African apes are our closest living relatives. Prehistoric human fossils until that time had all been found in Europe and Asia. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We begin the story of America's 37th president.
I, Richard Billhouse Nixon, do solemnly swear
that you will faithfully execute the office.
That I will faithfully execute the office
of President of the United States.
Of President of the United States.
Richard Nixon was sworn into office on January 20th, 1969. Nixon began his presidency at a difficult time. American forces, allied with the Army of South Vietnam, were continuing to fight against the communist forces of North Vietnam. Thousands of soldiers and civilians were dying. The Americans and South Vietnamese were making little progress, and there were anti-war demonstrations in the United States. There were also demonstrations against racial injustice. The issues that divided the nation also divided families and friends. At the same time, fighting the war meant there was less government money available to fight social problems. The last president, Lyndon Johnson, had proposed new legislation to help poor people and minorities. In some cases, Congress approved less money than he had requested. In other cases, lawmakers did not approve any money at all. The new president seemed well prepared to deal with the difficulties of being president. He was known for his ability to fight, to lose, and to keep trying. Richard Nixon was born in California. His family was poor. When he was about 10 years old, he harvested vegetables to help earn money for his family. He earned the money that he needed to go to college. Then he decided to study law. He was among the top students in his class. During World War II, Nixon served in the Navy in the Pacific. When he came home, he ran for a seat in Congress and won. As a member of the House of Representatives, Nixon became known for his part in the Alger Hiss case.
I am holding in my hand a microfilm of very highly confidential secret State Department documents. These documents were fed out of the State Department over 10 years ago by communists who were employees of that department and who were interested in seeing if these documents were sent to the Soviet Union, where the interests of the Soviet Union happened to be in conflict with those of the United States.
Alger Hiss was a former official in the State Department. He had been accused of helping to provide secret information to the Soviet Union. He denied the accusations. Nixon demanded a congressional investigation. Other members of the House thought the issue should be dropped, but Nixon succeeded and led the investigation. While never convicted of espionage, Hiss was tried and found guilty of lying to a grand jury that investigated the case. He was sentenced to prison. Some Americans disliked Richard Nixon for the way he treated people during the investigation. They felt that some of his attacks were unfair. At that time, fear of communism was very strong. Critics thought he was using the situation for his own gain to improve his political future. In 1950, Richard Nixon ran for the Senate. Nixon, a Republican, competed against Democrat Helen Gehagan Douglas, a former actress and three-time California congresswoman. During the often bitter campaign, he accused her of not recognizing the threat of communism in America. He also said that Douglas was pink right down to her underwear, a reference to her being sympathetic to communism. In response, Congresswoman Douglas gave Nixon a nickname he would never completely lose, Tricky Dick. Nixon won the election. Two years later, in 1952, the Republican Party chose him as its candidate for vice president. The candidate for president was Dwight Eisenhower. Eisenhower and Nixon easily defeated the Democratic Party candidates, Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson and Alabama Senator John Sparkman. They won again in 1956. During his 8 years as vice president, Nixon visited 60 countries. He faced violent protests during a visit to South America in 1958. The following year, he visited the Soviet Union. He and Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev had what became known as the Kitchen Debate. It took place in Moscow as they visited a model of a kitchen that might be found in an American house.
Давайте так. Телевидение, конечно, можно, но телевидение можно выступать, никого здесь нет, а потом это положите на склад.
The debate was about world peace. Nixon at one point told Khrushchev that he did not know everything, but there were light moments as well.
Не уступает.
Майна Звонтел, Майна, can match American lawyer.
Адвокату.
No question about that.
Вы адвокат капитализма, я адвокат коммунизма. Вот давайте мы посоревнуемся.
All that I can say from the way you talk and the way you dominate the conversation, you would have made a good lawyer yourself.
In 1960, Nixon accepted the Republican nomination for president. He had many years of political experience and had gained recognition as vice president. Many people thought he would win the national election easily, but he lost to the young John Kennedy. It was the closest presidential election since 1984. After losing to Kennedy, Nixon moved back to California. Then, in 1962, he tried to defeat Governor Edmund Pat Brown, a Democrat, and lost. In conceding defeat, Nixon gave a final press conference in which he told reporters,
"For 16 years, ever since the Hiss case, you've had a lot of fun. You've had an opportunity to attack me, and I think I've given as good as I've taken. I leave you gentlemen now, and you will now write it, you will interpret it, that's your right. But as I leave you, I want you to know, just think how much you're going to be missing. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore."
Nixon's political career seemed to be over. He moved to New York City and worked as a lawyer. But he made it clear that he was not ruling out a return to public life at some point in the future. Many Republicans began to see Richard Nixon as the statesman they wanted in the White House. By then, President Johnson had decided not to run for re-election in 1968. His Democratic Party was divided. The Republicans believed they had a good chance to win the election. Nixon campaigned hard against the Democratic candidate, Hubert Humphrey. Humphrey was vice president under Johnson, and had to defend the president's unpopular policies on the Vietnam War. Some Americans thought that the war should be expanded. Many others demanded an immediate withdrawal. Both Humphrey and Nixon promised to work for peace in Vietnam. On Election Day, voters chose Nixon. He narrowly won the popular vote, but collected many more electoral votes than Humphrey. On the day after his victory, Richard Nixon spoke to a gathering of supporters. He told them that the great objective of his administration from the start would be to bring the American people together. Once in office, President Nixon proposed legislation to deal with problems at home. He called his proposals the New Federalism. One proposal was for revenue sharing. Under his plan, the federal government would share tax money with state and local governments. For 3 years, Congress objected. Then, in 1972, the revenue sharing plan was finally approved. Lawmakers also approved legislation for some of Nixon's other ideas. One changed the way American men were drafted into military service for the war. The new law said young men would now have their names chosen in a lottery system. Many people had criticized the earlier system, which they said chose too many poor people and racial minorities. These were the men who were fighting and dying in Vietnam. Congress also approved a change to the Constitution to decrease the voting age from 21 to 18. Supporters of the amendment said if people were old enough to fight and die in war, then they were old enough to vote. The amendment became law when 3/4 of the states approved it in 1971. On another issue, Nixon proposed to build a system to defend against missile attacks. He said it was needed to protect American missile bases. Congress approved the idea in 1969. Critics said it would only intensify the arms race with the Soviet Union. Nixon's first appointments to the nation's highest court also caused much debate. He named two conservative judges from the South, Clement Haynsworth and G. Harold Carswell. Lawmakers said Haynsworth had been unfair to blacks in his decisions and that Carswell was not prepared for the job. Congress rejected both nominations to the Supreme Court. President Nixon faced these disappointments and others, but he still had moments to celebrate during his first term. One came on July 20, 1969. On that day, he and millions of people around the world watched as two American astronauts became the first humans to land on the moon.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. I just can't tell you how proud we all are because of what you have done. The heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.